Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. And in this daily editorial, I think this is probably the most important and most timely discussion we're going to have today, as we are going to be focusing on this spike higher in nickel prices. I reached out to Martin Turen, president and CEO of FPX Nickel, earlier today when I saw that nickel was up about 60%. As we're recording this, nickel is, let's say, right around $22 a pound. That is up over $8 just today, which correlates to about a 60% move. This is a wild move. And now it seems like anytime we get outsized moves, this is a special move all in itself, but we can all relate it back to that ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine. But Martin, I have to ask you, why today? Why is nickel going through such a pop today that really changes the narrative around this nickel price and the nickel market?
Yeah, it really is an unprecedented move. It's important to mention that the nickel price contract has never seen a day like today. So it is a bit of a watershed, to say the least. In terms of why today, you know, the nickel price had been moving up quite a bit since the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I think it had been up about 25 to 30% over the last couple of weeks since the war began. Today, you know, I think most of the commentary out there is putting today's, you know, extreme move down to a short squeeze, where, you know, I would suspect that after strong nickel price move over a period of time, some of the people on the short side of the trade probably just kind of threw in the towel. And so we're seeing it unwind in a pretty messy way today.
Well, Martin, you could make the case that nickel has been spiking really for the last 2 weeks. I mean, a lot of days it's been up 5 to 10%. I saw a lot of 8%, 9% days for nickel over the last week or two. Do you think there's just a point where the short traders just said enough pain already, let's get out, and then that just caused this parabolic move higher?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And I guess just, you know, for the benefit of the audience, you know, why does the Russia war, why is that sort of meaningful to the nickel market? Russia accounts for something like 7% of global nickel supply. And in terms of production of class one nickel, which is the very high purity nickel that goes into LME warehouses, something closer to about 15% of global nickel supply. While Norilsk, the main producer of nickel in Russia, has said that they, you know, continue to produce, and they actually own their own shipping fleet. And so they're still able to transport product relatively freely. There is some, I think, hesitancy, let's just say, to say the least, on the part of end customers to want to buy those nickel units. And even given the financial system issues around the SWIFT system, the ability for people to even buy Russian nickel and actually settle payment. So there's some, you know, structural issues there in terms of the, you know, settling of payments, but some longer term issues, or what may be longer term issues, on certain buyers just not being able to take Russian nickel, at least for the time being.
Martin, is this going to change the nickel market in terms of how end users look to use nickel? Obviously, it's changing where we might get our nickel from if we continue to have sanctions and if we more or less push Russia out of buying of any commodities. What sort of changes could this have for the nickel sector?
I mean, I think that's the most interesting part of this move is, do you have a long-term structural implication? Do you have consumers saying, we can't buy, you know, Russian nickel anymore? Like if you're a car maker, if you're a Ford or a GM or a Volkswagen, will it be verboten for those procurement managers? Will it be verboten from the standpoint of customers to know that there's Russian nickel going into those vehicles? That's an interesting question. I think it's too early to say whether people will take that view or not. But if people do take that view, then it means that that Russian-derived nickel will have a very limited audience, probably for consumption in China and some other countries. But, you know, in that scenario, maybe not as much into Europe and North America. So that would therefore put an implicit premium on, you know, nickel coming from places other than Russia.
Yeah, Martin, it really shines a light on areas that are developing projects outside of the East, such as Australia, Canada, United States, getting that domestic supply. But it also shines a light on these minerals and these metals are needed for a lot of these green initiatives that we hear about, whether it's the batteries for the EVs in the Nichols case, or a lot of these other metals fueling the, you know, copper fueling all the wiring for EVs, silver being important in these cars. All of these metals have an important part to play in the green narrative, yet we have often had environmentalists blocking mines and blocking permitting and blocking projects moving forward. Do you think there'll be a shift there too, just as far as the political winds and the sentiment winds around mining and how instrumental it actually is for all of these green energy initiatives?
I would like to think that there will be. I think there's a long process of education around that, though. People, I always make the analogy that people, you know, a lot of people now, I think, care a lot about where the food that they eat comes from, how it was grown, etc. That same mentality, I think, should apply logically to all your consumption decisions. So if those things are important for what you eat, they should be important for, you know, what you consume in terms of electronics or the car you buy, etc. I don't think that we live in a world yet where that connection has been made, but to me, it's inevitable that it will go in that direction. And, you know, that responsible consumers and people who think of themselves as environmentalists need to start to understand that mining plays a critical role in moving towards a low sort of carbon economy. And so environmentalists, you know, may seem paradoxical, but it's actually completely logical in my way of thinking. Environmentalists should be the biggest supporters of responsible mining practices that, you know, ensure that these metals are extracted in a responsible way, you know, that we're able to keep jobs at home, so to speak. So it represents, I think, a big opportunity for parties who are sometimes viewed as being at opposite ends of the spectrum to actually kind of get unified on this topic. And it's I think it's a really cool opportunity for people to think about and talk about.
So, Martin, from an investment side, when it comes to nickel and this general move that we are most likely going to see, have already started to see it more shifting to regional assets or more domestic supply, or even broadly, more supply coming from countries that, let's say, North American countries have better relations with. Where does that start in your mind? Is that the market realizing that we need more of these assets and money shifting into some of the leading companies, or who knows, funds that are invested in this sort of stuff? Or does it come from governments and governments needing to provide incentives for these companies to move projects forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting way to frame that question. I think about it more from the standpoint of the users of the of these mined commodities. So the manufacturers, let's say, taking the EV example, the car makers themselves. You know, if they know that they're going to face political pressure around having, let's say, high carbon nickel or, for example, Russian nickel in their vehicles, they're going to be the ones who are kind of keenest, and because they live and breathe this day to day, they're going to be in some ways maybe the quickest to move to this and to securing their regional supply chains that provides mined commodities to them in a way that conforms with their supply chain requirements. Governments, I think, and we're seeing this now. I mean, there was an announcement today, General Motors and POSCO are building a cathode active material processing plant in Quebec with the support of the Quebec government and the federal government of Canada. Similar announcement last week from BASF, which is the largest chemical company in the world for making battery chemicals in Canada. So the governments are moving on this. In some ways, I think actually investors are the last ones to the party. I think if investors need to think long and hard about the premium that will be placed on these, let's say, North American projects in years to come, to me, people should think about getting positioned in those types of opportunities now, because the winds are blowing in the direction where these types of assets will be heavily prized by those end consumers, by car makers and the other consumers of these metals.
Well, Martin, I agree. I think we'll see more offtake agreements direct to the manufacturers and the OEMs. But what about large mining companies coming in? I mean, we have seen a few takeovers in the nickel space just last year with Noront and with Western Areas. Do you think we'll see some of the larger polymetallic base metal producers come in and start scooping up more of these highly sought after assets? There's not that many nickel deposits that are on the menu in the first place.
One word answer, yes.
Mostly because we have to, right, Martin? But I guess another topic that we have touched on here is the price spikes in any commodity, but especially one like nickel that isn't nearly as big of a market as copper. Does this end up hurting the nickel market in your eyes?
You know, for a couple of years now, I've been saying that the biggest risk to the nickel market is not the price going down, but rather the price going up too quickly, too high too quickly. And today's move is an example of that. You know, as a CEO of a company that's moving forward a nickel project, you know, uncertainty in commodity pricing is problematic, I think, for people wanting to make decisions. And for commodities like nickel specifically, you know, we've seen a nickel price move like this in the 2006 and 7 period. And it was actually the worst thing that ever happened to the nickel market because of the impact of substitution and thrifting of nickel out of stainless steel, as well as, you know, disruption in the nickel supply in inventive new ways of nickel supply coming to market in the form of nickel pig iron. I don't see a big threat of a new kind of form of nickel supply coming to the market. I don't think there's anything on the horizon that would lead to a material increase in nickel supply, but substitution effects, I think, are real in these commodities. We saw it in cobalt. Cobalt price went too high, and you know, the battery makers started to find clever ways of getting the cobalt out of the batteries. And the same is true in any industrial metal that goes too high too quickly. Same is true with copper, you know, versus aluminum, let's say, as a possible substitute. So it's something that we have to be, you know, mindful of. It's kind of fun, I guess, when the nickel price has one of these crazy, insane days. Again, we've never seen it before, but it's not actually healthy for the market.
No, well, we're seeing a lot of unhealthy stuff happening in markets across the board, too. But a price spike like this, that's why I wanted to get you on, just to simply break down why it's happening in your eyes and how that could carry over more broadly to the nickel market. But it is so early. We need to see how this is all going to play out. And I think we're all waiting for this war to end and see where some of these pops and spikes that we've seen in commodities, where they level out at. Martin, thank you, as always, for your time, buddy. Really appreciate these insights in the nickel market. And if anybody has any further questions regarding nickel or anything within these markets, please email us, fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com. We will get Martin to address those. Martin, thanks again for your time, man. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, guys.